So when you're listening to Dharma talk, you're using all five faculties. You have enough confidence that you'll be able to understand what I say or what we say. You have enough energy that no one has fallen asleep yet. Enough mindfulness to follow my train of thought. Enough concentration to not be distracted, at least some of the time. And enough wisdom to consider what resonates with you in a talk and what doesn't. You know, the Buddha said, you know, try it for yourself. See what you think. So you see how it resonates with you. So those qualities are not something new, but something we all already have. And we can develop them and strengthen them. So as I said, the topic today is the what's considered the fourth hindrance, restlessness and regret. And most of us these days, in modern times, we add anxiety to that piece. Maybe at the time of the Buddha, anxiety wasn't so big a thing. And how we can practice with it by developing kind of the opposite, which is the faculty of concentration or samadhi. Most of us are familiar with the concept of a monkey mind, the idea that each of the thousands of thoughts that we have each day is a branch, and that like a monkey, we swing from one branch to another all day long. But I don't think that having a monkey mind is a problem for the monkey, right? And it doesn't have to be a problem for us either. The Pali word for restlessness literally means to shake. It's kind of interesting to think of that, you know, this feeling of shaking. It can be seen as a state of agitation, overexcitement. It can be primarily either physical or mental. When it's primarily physical, we tend to fidget a lot, move a lot, twiddle our thumbs, or even bolt. You know, I've known people who said they were so restless, before they knew it, they were standing up out of their meditation seat. Sometimes there are physical reasons that trigger the physical restlessness. Sometimes it comes from a different source. So if we haven't exercised, it's natural to want to move. It's natural to, it's good for the body to move, to get some circulation. So that's why it's so important to take care of ourselves. And it's one of the reasons that I really value the walking meditation, is that it, for me, it's really helpful in keeping my body from feeling restless. And the other thing that's common is too much caffeine. And, you know, if your body's moving faster when you have a lot of caffeine, not everybody, but most people, and your heart's beating faster, we breathe faster, and so that kind of gives us this physical restlessness. So those are things just to, taking care of ourselves can avoid that particular piece. But at other times, it's just the habitual impulse to do something, you know. Sometimes at home, you know, there's, you know, no caffeine involved. And, you know, we've maybe even exercised, but we're so used to doing stuff, you know, or long to-do lists. So let me go do this, let me go do that, let me go do that. And to a point that it becomes such a habit that we always feel like we should be doing something. You know, a lot of people have lost the ability to hang out, to just hang out and do nothing. When it's mental, restlessness is more of a mind that's scattered or just is persistently thinking. It just keeps thinking and thinking. We may have difficulty focusing on anything, jumps from one thing to another. It can't settle. It's not satisfied with anything. It just kind of goes here and there. And since it's often unpleasant, there's a tendency to want to push it away. okay, let me get back to my breath. Let's get concentrated. You know, there's this strong tendency to not want it to be there. But the more we push it away, the stronger it gets. So opposing a hindrance is usually not a very skillful way to work with it. So the restless mind has three directions it tends to go in. And I have a feeling that most of you have been in all three directions at some point. One common direction is going to the past. It can fall into regretting the past or judging the past, or sometimes, you know, it can be a pleasant remembering, you know, remembering, you know, the good old days. The mind might dwell on remorse, regret about what we've said or done. We can get caught in self-judgment, being inadequate in some way, or maybe ways that we look foolish and what other people think of us. Oh no, look what I did, and look, what do they think of me? Sometimes we can get lost in, as I said, happy memories of the past too. The remorse piece is one of the reasons, you know, that the precepts are so important in our lives, because when we actually do things, not when we think we did something foolish, but when we do things that are hurtful to others, when we do things that are hurtful to ourselves, it leaves an imprint in us. And when we sit down and are quiet, boy, those things show up. You know, I did something to somebody in the 10th grade, you know, and that you know, I was sitting peacefully in meditation, and all it was like, I mean, it was a big deal then, but I left right of something. And years later, just this massive guilt showed up. I was really surprised. But that's the way the mind works, you know, when we realize we purify our mind, we purify our ethics, then the things that we do, we really experience this remorse. So living a life of really carefully considering, it doesn't mean we don't make mistakes, but really carefully caring for others and ourselves leads to a much more peaceful mind. Others of us have more of a tendency to spend our time in the future for long periods, right? I think some of you experienced that. Planning is one of the things that we do in the future, and which is a really useful skill, but it can become compulsive, and we often find ourselves planning and replanning either an upcoming event, a conversation, often in kind of the same not helpful loop. We might worry about it, rehearsing it, and maybe some of you did that before your practice discussions. You know, I know that I tortured myself with some, rehearsing practice discussions in my early retreats. You know, I didn't know what they were about. I didn't realize that they were just for me. You know, I thought I had to somehow perform, you know, and, you know, so I, you know, I've got to come up with the right thing to say, and, you know, and, oh, I had a terrible sit. I can't show my teacher that. And, you know, I had all this stuff coming up, you know, and spent lots of my sitting moments, you know, rehearsing. Another common future journey we do is into anxiety. Anxiety is when there's something non-specific that might happen in the future. We don't know what it is. We just know it's not good. You know, and so it's this unknown that creates a lot of the anxiety. You know, we just have this feeling of, you know, ongoing feeling of a little bit of dread. One of my favorite quotes is Mark Twain's, and you know, most of you have heard it, is, "Some of the worst things in my life never happened." And So that's a really common state these days. We also might you know, love fantasizing, you know, and, you know, I think Gil alluded to that. You know, I've been working so hard, let me go on this really nice little fantasy, you know, and, you know, vacation in at the beach or hiking in the woods or something, just something really pleasant, you know, seeing somebody we want to see. So the third area, you know, we go to the past, we go to the future, and some of it is also, the third area is getting over-involved with the present in an unhelpful way. And that shows up just by being tense. It can show up in almost anything we do in our life, you know, tapping our fingers or foot when there's no music going on, you know, biting our nails. All the, you know, eating when we're not hungry. There's a lot of things in the present, including being uncomfortable in our bodies in the present, and then like trying to manipulate it somehow and not relaxing into it. So we're struggling with that restlessness. Those of you who are learning from the great teacher of pain, some of you who have chronic pain and pain is like really up for you in this retreat, you know, one of the things that to really bring into it is notice if you're struggling with it. You know, what can you relax? Does the struggle help the pain? Does it make the pain better? Or does it just make you think you're doing something about it? You know, so seeing we can relax into it, to whatever level we're able to work with it. With of all the hindrances, when we're restless, the attention tends to be scattered. It's away from the present. So in some ways, it's one of the harder hindrances to notice. It inherently makes it, it's really hard to notice we're restless when we're restless. We're just lost in it. It's moving so fast, you know, we go from this branch to that branch. It takes some level of composure, of concentration to notice it. And when the mind gets quieter, even if we've had a period of fairly, you know, the thoughts have slowed down, restlessness can still arise, and we may not recognize it because it's so much mellower. You know, it's not this quick buzzing going from here to there, but it's more, you know, thoughts like, you know, how am I progressing? You know, I mean, I want to get to samadhi. You know, I want to have something better happening. You know, it's just that kind of thinking, and we don't even realize that there's a lot of it just kind of in a low level. And the quieter the mind gets, the hindrances get subtler. So, but our attention gets more refined. So they work hand in hand. So we're always, you know, adapting, you know, seeing a little clearer, and then it gets subtler. Seeing a little clearer, and it gets subtler. The Buddha likened the hindrance of restlessness to the surface of a lake. And the wind's blowing and churning the lake, and it's covered with waves, and you go to look to your image and you can't see yourself because it's just all churned up. And that's the way restlessness works. It just, there's so much going on, so much movement in the mind that we just can't really see clearly. So recognizing it and having a friendly attitude towards a hindrance, towards restlessness is essential in getting to know it. If we make it wrong and we just want to get rid of it, we're adding the additional hindrance of aversion. And now we've got two hindrances at play, right? We've got restlessness and aversion to restlessness. So, you know, friendliness. And I can't say that enough, you know, that having a friendly attitude towards these aspects of our psyche is so essential in freeing the mind. If we notice, if we become mindful of restlessness, we're no longer caught in the hindrance. We're mindfulness. We're mindful of it. We're not lost in it. So the fact that things are moving quickly in the mind doesn't necessarily mean we have a hindrance. It's only if we're lost in it. It's a hindrance. If we're being mindful, the mind can be moving very fast sometimes. And sometimes we need the mind to move fast. You know, we have to react to a situation. We have this lots of reasons for the mind to move fast. Sometimes we just left something really important, really busy, you know, and the mind is settling. But with mindfulness, it doesn't have to block or clarity. It doesn't have to, we don't have to get lost in it. And what's really kind of ironic and wonderful is that the more you pay attention and mindful of restlessness, the more you develop concentration because you're paying attention. You know, concentration or samadhi is not staying on the breath. It's staying present for what's in front of us. So the more carefully we pay attention to restlessness, the stronger concentration can get. So whenever restlessness shows up, instead of seeing it as an unwanted companion who talks too much, we can really pay attention to our companion. And if you've watched a tennis match, you know, or some kind of sport where you're really engrossed in it, you know, and so you're watching one person hit the ball and then lands in a different place than the time before, right? It's not repetitive. It's repetitive in that the ball goes over the net, but different things keep happening, right? And so we're staying really engrossed in it and going from one thing to another, to another, to another. And this is really how a restless mind can be paid attention to. We just stay with paying attention to what it's doing from one thing to another. Or we can just, at different times, the mind is settled, we can just relax into a quiet breath or a breath that isn't so quiet and just be present with that. So concentration can build on a single object or it can build on multiple things that are changing. Some people who do metta, you know, they go from one metta phrase to another. It builds quite strong concentration doing metta practice. So it's just keeping the attention in the moment. I tend to prefer the term samadhi, but I do use them interchangeably because concentration has, to me, has the image of somebody with a furrowed brow, you know, trying really hard, laser focus. You know, I'm going to crack the safe, you know, that kind of mental attitude. And where samadhi really depends on relaxation and contentment. And the word concentration kind of, you know, doesn't quite include, you don't think of concentration and contentment together. So samadhi is a little bit of a word that really comes closer to the real meaning of the quality we're developing. So in practicing with it, when it shows up, you know, just like we talked about the the RAF formula, recognizing it and naming the hindrance can be really helpful. You know, often just by saying restlessness, restlessness, it kind of breaks a spell and can help us just really come back to the present. And then we do the same thing. You know, we allow it. It's okay that it's here. And we can feel it in the body. Now, some of my experience with restlessness have been, you know, I'm thinking a lot. I'm just really just thinking and thinking and thinking very quickly. And my mind feels like I've got, you know, thousands of bees in my head. You know, just kind of this buzzing feeling in my head. And it's a very strong physical sensation. And or we can feel tension in the body. Or we, you know, we all have our different patterns of how we relate to restlessness physically. But we can go to the body. You know, sometimes my heart's beating really fast when I'm restless, or, you know, I can feel like the circulation coursing really strongly. So, you know, if you haven't taken the time to explore it in the body, please do. And it's different every time. It's different every time. So don't think, I know what that is. You know, but really be with it when it's there. Really hold it. Really give it attention. You know, there's things like tightness, vibration, oscillation, pulsing, pressure, sometimes a lot of warmth. When we, and I've said this before, whenever we go to the body, we disengage from the thoughts that fuel the hindrance. And that's true for all of the hindrances. When we go to the body, we're taking away the fuel that nurtures it, that the story, the ideas. Restlessness can be really unpleasant. And I don't know if any of you have had it, so it's so unpleasant. As I mentioned, you know, I've known people to bolt, to actually get up out of, before they knew it, they're up. You know, they're just sitting there quietly and they're up. And I saw somebody run out of the room, and I asked them at the end of the retreat, what happened? And they said, I don't know. I just couldn't stand it anymore. So that's restlessness. And the teaching that really affected me with this, with how to be with restlessness, came from Jack Kornfield. And he said, I'll be the first meditator in the world to die of restlessness. And, you know, that kind of got to me, you know, it communicated to me. It's like, okay, nothing's, it's not going to kill me. I can meet this. I can meet this. And it's really essential when we go from restlessness to the breath, not to rush, because otherwise we're just doing more restlessness if we're rushing. You know, so really take your time as you come back, you know. Take your time. Sometimes, you know, as with all the hindrances, they can overwhelm us, you know, like the person who bolted. You know, and same thing with ill will, aversion, even desire can be so strong that we just can't hang with it. And we don't have to, you know, we can do things. One of the things that helped me a lot, in particular working with fear, for instance, I had a lot of fear. And, you know, my teacher said to me, work with it with bite-sized pieces. You know, so I would just, you know, okay, I'll touch it. You know, okay, that's a minute of it. Okay, I'm leaving. And with time, it became more and more familiar and less scary. And same thing with restlessness. You know, maybe it's too hard to stay with it for very long. And so we can use remedies or counterbalances. And a common method is to count breaths. And if any of you have done counting, sometimes that can really get you settled again. You count 10 breaths, and I'm slipping again. Okay. Seems they only last one Dharma talk. to 1 to 10 and then back down, that complicates it a little more. So with a lot of restlessness, to me, that's a really good way to work with counting. I've used what I call skillful bargaining, and where I say, okay, I can be mindful for 5 breaths. I don't even go for 10. I just say 5. That I can do. And after a little bit, my mind starts, feeling able to meet the state. Another really skillful way to work with really strong restlessness is to broaden the focus of attention. If you think of wild horses, you put them in a corral, and they're really unhappy, right? They're just ready to break out, But you put them in a pasture, and they're really happy. And they're just roaming, really happy with all this energy. And so the same thing with the mind. So we can focus on a mindfulness of sound. Just allow the mind to really get big and just listen to, be receptive to all the sounds in the world around us. And any sound that arises and goes away, we don't go looking for them, doing any work, just opening to the sound. Another way of broadening the attention is to do mindfulness of the whole body, so that we're not narrowing the attention, I'm going to just watch the breath, but just feel the whole body. Any sensation that arises can be an object, can be held. Little remedy, a happy mind is not restless. And a really simple thing we can cultivate is this little tiny smile. I can't quite do it with the mask on, but it's underneath, okay? And it's just this little baby smile. And you've seen, like, there's some Buddhas with that little smile. And they actually found in studies that even though it's contrived, and you're not really... you may feel totally the opposite, that with just a little bit of doing it, it actually changes how we feel. If that suits you, if resonates with you, feel free to try it. One last thing I'll say about, a remedy, is sitting still. Just like you take a glass of water, and you, it's like really dirty and cloudy and you shake it, but then you let it sit still and all of it settles to the bottom. And same thing actually happens just by keeping the body still. And even though we want to fidget, not fidgeting, just keeping it still. So those remedies, so-called remedies, work with what works for you. You can experiment with them. See if those are helpful to you. I like to have this little toolbox that can show up when I need it. But mostly, the most helpful thing is to be mindful of restlessness, to see it for what it is, to ride it till it's gone with awareness. Another aspect about restlessness is that we can be seduced by it. There's some juicy aspects to restlessness. And one of them is, we might have a lot of energy and we can go right into a creative attack. And I talked about this with a yogi today, but, you're getting all this energy and instead of, using wise effort to bring it into inside practice, we get into this wonderful, creative, enjoyable activity. And My favorite one is actually Gil tells it. I think he said he spent 3 days designing a helicopter. So I wrote a book. So, you know, most of us have been seduced by it, you know, and saying that, you know, recognizing it. And I only really went for it fully on once, you know, where I just let myself write the book, you know. Other times it's just been, you know, a few minutes of it and came back down. Sometimes we get seduced by sweet memories. And they're so nice. They're so pleasant. They're just so sweet. And the mind just goes, just keeps getting lost in it. And sometimes restlessness feels better than boredom or physical pain we want to avoid. So all those things are things that you know, kind of seduce us into restlessness. And I want to say one more thing again, you know, if awareness is present, a mind can be busy and not be a hindrance. I once learned to juggle from a book. It was called Juggling for Dummies. Didn't learn really well, but the thing that you find, because you're moving really fast, is that my mind was really still. You know, my mind was perfectly still and my body's like moving really fast. And so things can move fast and there's no restlessness. And same thing can happen with an active mind. A mind can be very active, solving, problem solving, doing something, and without the quality of restlessness. And, you know, in juggling, one of the things that's really necessary is to constantly let go. So I really like that analogy, you know, because if you hold on to the ball, you know, it doesn't work anymore. You know, it's a constant letting go. And same thing with a busy mind is the constant letting go allows it to flow and not be a hindrance. So with mindfulness, we pay attention to what's going on in a non-reactive way. It's just noticing what's in front of us, noticing what's here. With samadhi, with concentration, it's the ability to keep the mind steady where we want it, whether it's in a single object or whether it's in something that changes. Concentration provides the stability and stillness in the mind for mindfulness to be used well. Because you can't be mindful if the mind can't... For instance, if you're being mindful of some little animal you just saw, you know, if your attention is flitting to something else, you can't really be mindful of the little animal. Your attention's already on something else. So it's concentration that keeps the attention there. And as I said, one of the prerequisites of any kind of deep concentration, of deep samadhi, is contentment. So a lot of people try to concentrate, try to go into deep samadhi with a lot of striving, a lot of effort. And you can get a certain level of concentration and a certain level of, ooh, a lot of wonderful things are happening and gets exciting, but it's very brittle. It's very brittle. It doesn't last, and it's a lot better to take your time and making sure that all the attitude is wholesome, that the that you relax and contented and satisfied, and that's what leads to this deeper state of samadhi. Another way of thinking of samadhi is as a unity of awareness. It's a unified mind, an undistracted mind. And there's two important aspects in developing this quality of mind. And some of you have heard it as in Pali, you know, vitaram vichara. But it's two things. It's the movement of returning to the present when we've been distracted, coming back to the breath, for instance. And then once we've returned to the present moment, sustaining our attention. So there are two different aspects that we work with, the returning and the sustaining, keeping the attention in place. In developing samadhi, the attitude we have when we return needs to be wholesome. If you go on a journey, let's say you go on a great vacation, and your attitude about going home is welcoming. Oh, wow, you know, it's really nice to be home. You know, you want to go back home. But if your attitude is, you've been away so long, you know, how could you do that to me? you know, you don't want to go back there, you know. And so to develop this is you want to be welcoming, have a welcoming attitude, welcoming ourselves home every time we go on a mental journey. So think about today in the last three days of practice. How are you towards yourself when you come back? As you come back, oh, I blew it again, you know. Now I'm home. I'm home. In sustaining the attention, you know, one of the things that I found really helpful is I like to think of the quality that we use when we sustain our attention, caressing the breath. And I think of it as, you know, if we caress someone we love, you know, we don't rush through it. You know, we don't say, okay, I'm going to caress them 10 times. You know, we're very present and lovingly and affectionate. And so can we caress our breath with that same continuous attitude? You know, maybe you can relate to petting a dog. You know, I'm going to get 10 strokes in of petting, you know. you know, petting a dog is so, it's kind of joyous. It's kind of sweet and we kind of feel it. And, you know, our bodies actually calm down, right? You know, they said that petting a dog lowers your blood pressure. Yeah, so it's a very it's a sweet, sweet thing to really show up in a wholesome way for our breath or for our bodies or for whatever the object of attention is. And you know, as we do this over and over again, it becomes a little bit like riding a bicycle. You know, we kind of ride a bicycle uphill, and then we get to go downhill, and we're coasting. And there's a level on, you know, that happens to us, you know, and it becomes effortless for a while. You know, and then we have to go uphill again for a while. You know, and so on retreat, often, you know, there's a lot of rhythms like this, you know, and I, you know, I used to find myself, I'd have a couple of effortless sits, you know, and it's like, oh, that's, I found it, this is great. And then the next one was just like totally uphill, you know, and not, for me, what was important was not darkening my mind when it felt a little more like uphill. And then it wasn't quite as much uphill because I wasn't struggling with it anymore. And, you know, as we practice, as we get more settled, you know, and now even on the third day of retreat, you're already a little bit more settled, a little quieter. There's less and less to do. We don't have to do so much. Our only job is to see what's there. There's a lot less doing. And the quieter we get, the less we do. That's kind of a nice thing, you know, when you think about, you know, there's, you can really fully relax. There's nothing to do. What a wonderful thing to not have to do anything, not have to be anything other than we are. We can't force a samadhi. We can only create the conditions to nurture it, and not to make it some great goal, but to, you know, contentment's good enough. If we're content, there's nothing lacking, you know. And it's that attitude of really just showing up for what's here, however we are. Oh, restlessness is present, okay. Or something else is present. That's okay too. And the purpose of all of this is not to have some experience or another, some deep, fantastical experience, but to see clearly. And what we're looking at is seeing clearly so that we're free of grabbing, that attaching of the way we grasp at things that make us suffer in life. And it's the clear seeing that allows all that to drop off, to drop away. So I'd like to end with a poem. It's by Donna Faltz. It's called Intimate with All Things. The Buddha said, I am intimate with all things. Imagine that, to be on the same close terms with suffering and panic as bliss and rapture. To know the souls of water buffalo as surely as my own. To push away nothing. To let the sweet or bitter taste of life linger. To see the beloved in everything. And when that isn't my experience, to be intimate with self-hatred, with unmet preferences, and the many ways that I don't show up as saintly. Imagine that. So let's sit a couple of minutes.